Welcome into Opportunity Detroit. I'm Ann Thomas, and on this edition of the show, you'll meet Scott Strode. He's the founder of The Phoenix, an organization promoting no alcohol events and using community to find recovery. You'll also meet Darnell Adams. He's the Vice President of Detroit Community Initiatives for the Gilbert Family Foundation. He's going to talk to us about more investments for the city of Detroit from the Gilbert family. And finally, Miranda Clark. She is the co-owner of James Oliver Coffee, and you do not want to miss her story. A great show about what's happening in and around the D right after these messages. Welcome into Opportunity Detroit. I'm Ann Thomas, and my first guest on this edition of the show is Scott Strode. He is the founder of The Phoenix, and The Phoenix recently held an event here in Detroit. And Scott, welcome to the show. First thing I want you to do is tell our listeners what exactly is The Phoenix.
Well, The Phoenix is a unique approach towards substance use recovery and mental health, where we use, you know, the power of community and activities to help each other on this healing journey. And I always say the Phoenix is a place that believes in you, even if you don't yet believe in yourself as you're coming out of addiction. So that's what saved my life a bunch of years ago, and now we're saving others with the same community.
Scott, share your story. You said the Phoenix saved your life. Can you share some of what happened?
Yeah, so I experienced early childhood trauma, you know, father with untreated mental illness and a stepfather with untreated alcoholism. And those self-esteem wounds led to my own drug and alcohol use. And then drugs and alcohol was a coping mechanism, but one that started stripping away my dreams of who I thought I could be. And when I found sobriety, I got into a boxing gym, and there was something about getting in the ring for the first time that gave me this strength and fortitude and belief in myself that I didn't have before. Then I started climbing and doing triathlon. And so I was doing the Phoenix before it had a name, and I decided to start it more formally and share those experiences with other people on their recovery journeys. And that's how we went from about 60 people served back in 2006 to we're about a month away from reaching 1 million people served all time through the Phoenix's free programs in communities across the country.
So what the Phoenix does is the Phoenix comes into communities and holds maybe the first ever alcohol-free events. Is that how it works, Scott?
Yeah, so those events, our events are anything led by a volunteer who's been touched by substance use. It could be somebody in recovery or a loved one or supporter or somebody who's just civically minded that wants to be part of the solution in their community. And they'll lead any meaningful event. It could be a coffee social, a walk, a CrossFit workout, a yoga class. Or it's a substance-free event, like a social event where we have great mocktails and we're listening to music, but alcohol and drugs just isn't part of it.
You know, this is so interesting because whenever we talk about a lot of events going on in different towns, we always say, oh, and there'll be cocktails or alcohol included or free alcohol. So this is kind of changing people's mindset, it sounds like.
Yeah, it is. And what you realize is that the authentic connections you develop at Phoenix events give you this network of friends. And those network of friends are there for you in a different way when you're sort of shocked by the reality of life, which we all are at time from time to time. But your Phoenix family's there for you. And then there's another day that you get to be there for them, and the same thing happens to them. But you're building these bonds around positive coping mechanisms like cycling or like going out for a run together or just going out to listen to live music. You just know the 10 or so folks you went with are going to be having mocktails instead of drinks.
And you're doing this throughout the country. Explain how you're doing it throughout the country.
Yeah, so we have a national nonprofit that empowers volunteers anywhere that to start Phoenix. So if you, say, have been touched by this through somebody you love and you want to be part of the solution, you jump into our app, which is called Nuform. It's a new form of digital community. That's why the name. And Nuform has about 100 other nonprofits on it besides us that just work around mental health and addiction. And this sort of marketplace of healing, you apply to be a volunteer and you start a ride or you start a run or you start a social event, whatever it is you want to do. And our staff trains you in our model and we support you on this journey. Then we advertise it on Nuform. So say you're a musician and you want to teach people how to drum. And so we meet in a space, we find the space. You bring the talent, and we bring the people. And so through the Phoenix app, which is Nuform, they can find that event and show up. The only cost of admission is 48 hours of sobriety. So that's seems like a low bar, but for some, that's a high bar. But sure. But you show up, and you're supported. And in reflection, you're like, wow, that was the best night of my week, and I didn't have to drink or use, and I want to go to Phoenix more.
And so you're doing this kind of thing throughout the country, and you had an event in Detroit in August. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we have a really robust calendar there. We have functional fitness, yoga, CrossFit, coffee socials, and we have recovery support meetings. But we did this cool sort of sober event, and it was at Rooftop Social. And it was a zero proof event, so no drugs or alcohol there, just mocktails, and that stuff was free. If you just show up and you're 40 hours sober, we had a DJ, a mocktail competition, which was fun. So, you know, just because you're not drinking doesn't mean that you can't have a great beverage and be laughing and have a good time with your friends.
What has been the reaction of people who have attended these events? What are they saying to you about this, Scott?
I actually think that there's this appetite for this more nationally now than ever before, where people are, you know, they're having a seltzer or a really good mocktail, and they're not wanting to get sloppy drunk and have a bunch of drinks with their friends. I think a lot of us are actually looking for authentic connection, because the digital world doesn't feel that way sometimes, but through Nuform in Phoenix, you can find that more authentic connection. So we actually see a greater appetite for Phoenix events, even in the last couple of years, than we saw, say, 10 years ago.
You know, that's a really good point about the digital world, because you do go on social media and you see a lot of people, and they've posted pictures about their events, and they usually have a drink in their hand, and it looks like, you know, you almost have to have a drink in your hand to go to the event. You're changing the mindset throughout the country.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's more about what are we doing shoulder to shoulder, looking out at this activity, whether it's gone to play pickleball together or gone into a climbing gym for the first time and learning how to go up a climbing wall. Phoenix can be anything, but the thread that runs throughout all those events is that there's an ethos. We're here to lift each other up and support each other. And the 48 out of sobriety, it just shows that we're showing up in an authentic way for each other.
You know, the other thing is the mental health component, because oftentimes a lot of people will have a drink or they'll drink too much because they are dealing with anxiety and depression. Can you talk a little bit about that component and how this can actually help people?
Yeah, I think that that's where our physical activities are great, because, you know, I think movement is medicine. You know, you sometimes are stressed about something and you go out for a 20-minute walk, and by the end of it, you forget what you were so worried about. But when you're sharing that activity with others, then you're not in isolation and alone. You can have somebody to bounce ideas off of. They're bouncing ideas off you. You're talking about hurdles or challenges you're facing, and you're helping each other get through that. And by the end of that, you feel lifted and supported. And there's evidence out there that exercise is really powerful around supporting your mental health. And community, I think, is the same.
My guest here today on Opportunity Detroit is Scott Strode. He's the founder of The Phoenix. Now, Scott, what's the future of this organization? Do you have big plans, or can you kind of share with us what you see for the future of The Phoenix?
Yeah, so we just are wrapping up a five-year effort to serve a million people with Phoenix programs, free recovery support. And our goal in the next 5 years is to serve 10 million. So we're aiming high. And then Nuform, our mobile app, is really going to be a marketplace of healing where we aggregate thousands of nonprofits that work in and around mental health and addiction. So if you know of a good nonprofit, or you're a nonprofit leader and you want to be on Nuform, or if you're a person who could just benefit from being in the Nuform community, go to the App Store and download it and jump in. And if you want to be part of the solution, become a volunteer, because we're hoping to activate 10,000 more volunteers over the next 5 years. We already have about 4,000 nationally and several hundred in the Detroit area.
Wow, that's incredible. Have communities been pretty welcoming to you once they understand what you're trying to do, Scott?
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people want to be part of the solution, right? It's something we see in our communities, addiction, and we see it in our families too. And we want to help in some way, but we often don't have the tools to do that. Well, Phoenix can be that tool, because you can also be a volunteer helping others. Volunteerism is a way to give back and actually find some agency around some of these complex problems. We all have some unique gift we can share with others, and sharing it with people while they're rising from the ashes of their addiction can also help you rise.
Well, you know, that's interesting, because I have a feeling that volunteering is probably good for mental health, for people's state of mind.
It is. It also gives us a sense of citizenship, you know, a community that we're there for, and then in turn, they're there for us. But when you're giving back to others, it helps you find a life of purpose. You know, we all have jobs and have to work and pay bills. Sometimes those jobs are our purpose and meaning, but sometimes they're not. Sometimes volunteering after you go home from that job is actually where you find that. You know, you were, say, a runner at one point, and you start leading a jogging event for Phoenix. You're taking all these people that are trying to find hope and a path to heal, and giving them a tool that helps you. And that passion comes through and starts to inspire others. And then a few years from now, the person who showed up for your run ends up being the volunteer that leads it for the next few years into the future.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Scott Strode, founder of The Phoenix, thank you for taking the time today to talk to us on Opportunity Detroit. What a great, fascinating concept you have here.
Thank you so much, and thanks for lifting it up, and come out to a Phoenix event anytime you want.
Absolutely. It sounds like great fun. Coming up next on Opportunity Detroit, the Gilbert Family Foundation is making more investments in Detroit. We'll tell you all about it. You are listening to Opportunity Detroit. The Gilbert Family Foundation has announced over $4 million in new investments to expand opportunities for Detroit entrepreneurs and developers. Darnell Adams, Vice President of Detroit Community Initiatives with the Gilbert Family Foundation, thank you for taking the time today to talk to us about this.
Yeah, and thanks for having me on.
So Darnell, tell us a little bit about how this is going to work. Where's the money going?
Yeah, great question. So the $4 million investment is going to be spread out across two organizations, Black Leaders Detroit and the Metro Detroit Black Business Alliance. These are two partners that we've worked with in the past. We are merely working to scale up their efforts to, you know, support entrepreneurs in the ecosystem. I mean, we know that Detroit has more than 50% of our workforce comes from small business, so it is literally the backbone of how our city functions. And so we will be gifting $2 million to Black Leaders Detroit to expand their access to capital for, specifically in this instance, Black real estate developers with no interest loans that will provide more resources to help them grow. And why this is important is because there are no real products that exist in the market that allow for developers who are doing small residential developments to access capital to renovate and put a property back to productive use. Typically, you have to own a home and buy a house and get dollars from the bank to do that rehab. But here, this is an opportunity where Black Leaders Detroit will be able to lend dollars to developers, specifically developers coming out of programs like Building Community Value, where which is headed up by Chase Cantrell, and there are like Detroiters and Hamtramck residents who are taught how to do development, and then gives them the tools to go into their communities and actually put those properties back to productive use after they acquire them. So that is going to be a really dynamic program, and also hopefully a model to other banks that, you know, this product can work to help put back the community where there are vacant properties or blighted properties. And then with Michigan Black Business Alliance, you know, we've continued to invest with Charity Dean and her team to ensure that anyone who is aspiring to become a business owner can, one, you know, sort of access capital. And that is an entire roadmap and journey that Michigan Black Business Alliance takes, you know, entrepreneurs through that journey to make sure that what they're trying to do with the bank is possible. And for businesses that are sort of growing out of their space, or they need to expand and go to the next level, they're developing an accelerator to help do one-on-one coaching to those businesses so that, one, they understand that they can grow in the city of Detroit, stay in this region, and not have to leave once they get to a point of growth where they need to scale up. And so that program should help, you know, again, create more jobs, create more opportunities for entrepreneurs to stay right here at home and continue growing these Detroit businesses.
You know, Darnell, it sounds to me like this money and these programs are going to have a major impact on Detroit's neighborhoods, which is huge for this city.
Yes, absolutely. I think about the fact that, you know, a lot of new growth is happening in and around Detroit neighborhoods. If you're along, you know, the Fashion, Livernois, the Avenue of Fashion,
yes,
or
exactly.
You're along East Warren or Jefferson, like, this is where businesses are growing. And it's important that these parts of the city have the same opportunities as you will find in other other thriving cities. So, yes, it's very important that you as a resident have the ability to work, live, and play in your neighborhood.
And, you know, the stronger the neighborhood, the Detroit neighborhoods, the better they look, the more vibrant they are, the better it is for the entire state of Michigan, for Southeast Michigan, because people are going to want to come here to live, work, and play. So talk a little bit more about the mentorship part of this, where you're actually helping entrepreneurs, possible people who want to start a small business, actually get into it and get going.
Yeah, you know, so for the Michigan Black Business Alliance, their Capital Connect program takes in cohorts of aspiring entrepreneurs at a time. And what they found is that sometimes some entrepreneurs are not quite ready for the Capital Connect program. So they even have a pre-Capital Connect program that they're taking entrepreneurs through to just make sure that they're ready to connect to that program. And in that program, there's one-on-one coaching to assess, you know, the businesses, their growth opportunities, and then ways that they can tie into different banks to access capital. But the program that, you know, we're really excited about is, we're excited about all of it, but
sure.
This accelerator that they're starting, this is going to be one-on-one coaching, like culturally competent coaching to support Black businesses or Detroit-based businesses, urban-based businesses that need a different set of coaching to help them navigate, whether it's permitting, whether it's acquisition of land, whether it is negotiating deals with other businesses. It's a different way of approaching coaching, because these are skills that don't just exist. You have to sort of build a team. And one thing I can say about Detroit's entrepreneurship ecosystem is that it is very, very strong. And what we're learning too is that a lot of our partners are building the mentorship component into their technical assistance. And that's not just the organization doing the TA, that's them talking to other businesses and asking them to help mentor other businesses so that they can learn from a business that's already been where a new business is heading.
And you know, this is interesting because sometimes all you need is for somebody to show that they have confidence in you, you know, that you've got an idea and then they may have already done it and they may have already be very involved in a small business. But then when they hear you say, you know what, this can work, you can do this, that's all they need.
That's right. And I have to give a lot of credit to my team. So, yes, I manage all of our Detroit work, but that includes four different pillars: public spaces, arts and culture, housing, stability. But economic mobility is the team where this investment is coming from. So, you know, we have a team, a new leader, a director of economic mobility named Linda Nosby, and she comes from Comerica Bank. And, you know, when she got in here, she saw the need, saw the opportunities, and really ran and made these investments happen, working with one of our other team members, Brandy Brown, to like make sure that what we are hearing on the ground made sense, and then turn those conversations into real investments so that, you know, we're meeting the needs of what we're hearing in the community. So yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with that.
My guest here today on Opportunity Detroit is Darnell Adams. He's the Vice President of Detroit Community Initiatives for the Gilbert Family Foundation. Darnell, tell our listeners about your work and who you are and what you do every day for the Gilbert Family Foundation.
Yeah, so I I work for four different program teams, as I just stated, but really my role is to help shepherd the $500 million commitment that Dan and Jennifer Gilbert made to Detroit back in 2021. And so that includes me every single day making sure that all of these teams are working sort of interconnectedly to have the greatest impact across neighborhoods. All of our work takes place in neighborhoods, and we realize that, you know, from housing stability, where we want to make sure that no one's being displaced, whether that's through tax foreclosure or eviction, that they are then accessing other stable housing resources while simultaneously receiving economic mobility tools, whether that is entrepreneurship needs, whether that's small business needs, whether that's budgeting, planning, things that are essential to stability financially and opportunities to grow that your wealth, while wrapping that all into public life investments through our arts and culture and public spaces teams, making sure that when you walk out into your community, you are looking at world-class amenities that you will find in other cities. And so I've been really proud of like all the work that my team has been able to do over the last 4 years.
Oh, you absolutely should be very proud of it, because frankly, you have a really great job because you get to make a difference in people's lives. I mean, you're changing the way our community looks, Darnell.
Thanks, Ann. Well, I mean, I was born and raised on the east side of Detroit, still an east sider. And, I've always approached this work from the lens of I want the future of Detroit to have a better experience than I did growing up. So for me, it's all about making sure the next generation is well taken care of and that we pass a baton to them that they can see a future with.
Can you share with us what you'll be doing next? I know you're probably strategizing behind the scenes, knowing you, Darnell. What is your next big plan for the city? Can you give us a hint?
Of course, when there's something new, you'll be the first to know.
I love it. Darnell Adams, Vice President of Detroit Community Initiatives for the Gilbert Family Foundation. Thank you for your time today. We love the great work that you're doing.
Thanks, Ann. Appreciate you.
Coming up next on Opportunity Detroit, you will meet the woman behind the James Oliver coffee shops. to Opportunity Detroit. I'm Ann Thomas, and our next guest here on Opportunity Detroit is Miranda Clark. She is the co-owner of James Oliver Coffee. Miranda, thanks for taking the time to join us today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Tell our listeners all about James Oliver Coffee. How did it get started?
Well, it was actually started by my parents in 1995. They had a coffee roastery called Black Bear Micro Roastery in New Hampshire. It was almost the entire time the two of them and one part-time employee, other than my sister and myself helping. I was a teenager when they began it. And they were in the pursuit of coffee excellence, and they mostly did direct-to-consumer shipping out coffee. I moved to Detroit, I don't know exactly when, almost 15 years ago. Yeah, over 15 years ago. I moved here to teach at the College for Creative Studies, and I had never been to Michigan before or Detroit, and I fell in love with the city, and then I met my husband, David, fell in love with him, and was actually at an art event, and my opening line was that my dad roasted coffee because he was into coffee, which I thought was terribly lame at the time. I immediately regretted it, and I thought, oh, I blew it. Long story short, we got married. Our two daughters are from his first marriage, so I became a stepmother, and we bought a factory in Detroit, renovated it into a loft where we lived, and he was in coffee in all types of ways, teching, opening cafes. He did sales for some coffee companies, and he said, we should bring over your parents' coffee roastery, and I said, no, thank you. I saw all the hard work that they did, and I loved the coffee, I wasn't very interested. And then he would bring it up again, and, you know, the timing was right. So we did, and I loved the coffee, and my parents, they did such a good job with it, but they didn't really market it. And so it was kind of exciting to see what, with all of David's skills, of where we could grow it. So we brought the roastery over from New Hampshire in 2019. And the roaster is with a Petrosini from Italy, and my father had modified it to roast to the temperatures that he wanted, because there weren't any made that way. So it was an old roaster and a computer program and all of these modifications. And so we set it up and we started roasting, and we started with mail order. We have some of the same mail order customers. I actually spoke to one earlier. He has my cell phone, and if he doesn't know his tracking, he just calls me and I tell him where his coffee is. So he's been ordering coffee from our family, the second generation, for maybe almost 30 years. I love to know some of those stories, and that's fun. We started roasting in the city and really focusing on wholesale. And of course, then COVID happened, so that was a challenge for everyone. And so we really leaned into the mail order, and we did a little bit of grocery stores. And then after that, David's like, we should have a flagship cafe. And I was like, no, thank you. That sounds like a lot of work again.
I love this. No, thank you. That sounds like a lot of work. But then we did it.
We did. And we opened in Corktown, where Detroit Institute of Bagels used to be, which I was a huge fan. I cried when they closed. I didn't know where I'd get my bagels, and then cried later that we had to make them. So it's beautiful space, and it's like a bakery, a kitchen, and a cafe. So I was like, wow, we're getting into another three-ring circus here. And we make everything in-house, the bagels, pastries, sourdough, cookies, muffins. So that was, yes, a lot of work, but it was also for me, I really got to lean into the hospitality aspect of it. I know almost, not everyone, but I know most of our regulars. I feel like I'm hosting a party, and that's where I thrive.
Yeah,
I love to drink coffee. I don't really like to make it. I like to
just
serve it.
Thinking, I was just thinking as you're talking, you would be a great hostess. You sound like a lot of fun. And it sounds like, I have to go to James Oliver Coffee just to say hello to Miranda. And, that's part of it, right? Because you sound like you're very welcoming. And even though you know it's a lot of work, you are enjoying what you're doing.
I absolutely love it. I do. I just like to tell the story of I was like, no thanks. And then we did it. And it is. It's the hardest work of my life. Although teaching was very hard work too, but it's very rewarding, and the cafe is truly, it's an extension of our home. And when my parents had their coffee roastery, they briefly had a cafe as well, and they we collected friends from the cafe, from people that worked for us, from our regulars, and one of our nearest and dearest friends, who became family, is a pilot, and he was in Detroit this year, and he got to come in and see all of our locations, well, almost all. And when he was in Corktown, I introduced him to one of our other regulars, and he was like, "You're doing what your parents did, just on a bigger scale." So that was like just a full circle moment that I really loved.
Absolutely. So tell us about the other locations. Where are the other locations?
Okay, so our second location is in the Guardian Building, which is just absolutely breathtaking. To have any part of that space was an incredible opportunity. It's very small, so it was a way of like, okay, so we roast our coffee, and now we're making all of our baked goods. Can we support a cafe with the coffee, which we do? We have lots of wholesale partners that we supply coffee with. But then we were outfitting with our freshly baked bagels and pastries and breads, and yes, that worked. I think the Guardian's like just turned two this year. And we've looked at other spaces. We've been approached to run them. And usually, my usual, no, thank you. They were either too big or the timing wasn't right. And also, we couldn't do any of this without our incredible team. We have just the best staff in the world. We have part-time staff. We have incredible leadership at the roastery and the cafes. And honestly, they are the heart of our company. So then Wyandotte was next, and we opened that this, actually David just shared a picture. We started doing demo a year ago yesterday, but we only opened a couple months ago because, you know, things take longer. And that was an old Saunders space, so we wanted to renovate it and kind of pay homage to that history. And that has been really wonderful. So that we, again, bring the bagels and the pastries there every day, and coffee gets, you know, sent maybe twice a week or something like that. And it's fantastic. And I did not realize the connection between Wyandotte and Detroit. We have so many regulars that were coming into Corktown that either lived in Wyandotte and work in the city or vice versa. And that was a wonderful connection. And then the latest and greatest is in Brush Park. So it's on Woodward Avenue and right by Grey Ghost. And they approached us to look at it, and I did my usual no thank you, because we'd already signed a lease at in Woodbridge, which is going to be wonderful, and we were doing Wyandotte, and that was taking longer and it was more expensive, but then we looked at it and I was like, oh, it's already a cafe, we just need to, you know, a little bit of paint, some vintage seating, our, you know, usual touches, and there we go. So that just opened, and that one I think is the most my style, so I'm very excited about that one. We're also going to have a little more focus on retail there. My mother had a store that had something from everywhere, in every state. It was called 50 Home. And so I'm not doing exactly that, but I am, as homage to her, emphasis on U.S. made and local and then vintage, and so that's exciting for me to show off there. We have a little bit of that at all the locations. And then next will be Woodbridge. So, yes, that will be five cafes and a possible sixth one on the way, but I can't announce it until the lease is signed. And then that's it, because it'll be 6 years of the coffee roastery with six cafes. So I feel like that's very full. Oh, and also I have a very small gallery in the Guardian Building across from our cafe. So
they're amazing.
I have to focus on that.
So my guest here today on Opportunity Detroit is Miranda Clark. She is the co-owner of James Oliver Coffee. First of all, Miranda, when do you sleep? Because I have no idea how you'd be sleeping with all of these fabulous locations. Yes, there you go. There you go. So all of the coffee is roasted in a former chili factory on East Davidson in Detroit?
That is correct.
Wow.
We just got a new roaster. Well, just. I can't remember when it arrived from Prague. The email chain was in about pirates in Ukraine, and the getting it here, it was wild. So it is at the roastery, and it's a new roaster for us. As I mentioned, we've been using the one that my dad had, and that was over 30 years old, similar to the bagel oven we inherited from VIB. We had to upgrade that recently. So this roaster is going to allow us to keep the same amazing quality, but roast a little bit larger quantities, and then also it's just going to be more efficient. So we're really excited about this Typhoon roaster.
So it's interesting, early in the interview, you talked about coffee excellence. I know you can't share any recipe secrets or whatever, but what exactly does that mean? What goes into making a really great cup of coffee?
So coffee, I mean, green coffee, you know, it's an agricultural product. So we always work with when we're getting our beans, with importers that assess it. So making sure that you start with buying really good quality beans, which is very challenging, especially right now, tariffs, and even if in the most calm of states economically, there's also, because it's agricultural, there could be a region that the crop is different that year. So we try to keep the same blend that my dad had and a lot of the single origins, but we're also have expanded to our own roast profiles. Our roaster came up with a couple of new blends, which we really love. So making sure that you're starting with a really good product and knowing if something's not in season or is just out of reach, that you can, you know, always bring it back. And then we keep our beans cool, like if it's just like something else, if you just put it out in the sun or didn't have any care with it, it wouldn't keep. And then just our computer program that we're doing link temperature controls.
Yeah, that's
so we're making sure that, yeah, thermodynamics, that one I can't explain to you, but that was the basis of how my dad roasted, and we're keeping that the same way. And small batches, so you could get a roaster and roast a ton of coffee at once, and that would be more efficient and economic, but the taste wouldn't be there. So being a micro roastery means that there's a lot of attention to each roast. We also have a sample roaster, so we can test things out, and then making sure for quality. And also with our new roaster, it has like a destoner built in and some other things that make sure that all of those recipes are made the way that we intend for them to be.
Oh, it's fascinating. So for people in our audience that may want to start a small business and get involved in something that they really love to do, even though it might be a lot of work and, you know, as you point out, I don't know, what kind of advice do you have for them?
I would say research, and then know that you can always scale up. So just like, I mean, it's incredible for me to say that I have a gallery, I have a coffee roastery, I have five with maybe to be six cafes. It feels unfathomable to say that, but, you know, we started with what we could do and then we built on that. And I have the advantage of it being a second generation company, which I wanted no part of, but I'm so gracious to that I had that now. So if you don't have, you know, if it's something that you don't have a connection to, try to seek a mentor. You know, I mean, I did that with my art practice and teaching. The first semester I taught, I had no idea how to do that. And so I thought back to what worked for me when I was a graduate and undergrad. And then I always told my students this, and the same applies for small business, work comes from work. So if you are working hard at something and you keep trying, you're going to get somewhere.
That's such great advice. Miranda Clark, co-owner of James Oliver Coffee, it was great talking to you. I am going to come to one of the shops and we're going to have a cup of coffee.
Absolutely. I look forward to it. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it was my pleasure. I'm Ann Thomas. Thank you for listening to Opportunity Detroit. Enjoy the rest of your day.